A child witnesses a brutal murder.
I had to point out my uncle.
They had a little six-year-old girl who was saying it was her Uncle Clarence. Case closed.
Years later, the girl recanted. But the courts wouldn't let him go. Even DNA wasn't enough.
Do they want me to hand them the killer on a silver platter? Okay, that's what we'll do.
June 7th, 1998, was a very hot night in Barberton, Ohio. Hoping for a breeze, 58-year-old Judy Johnson left her front door ajar. Sometime after midnight, her granddaughter Brooke heard a commotion coming from the kitchen. When she went to look, she saw a man beating her grandmother.
I was scared, so I ran back to my grandma's room and covered up my head with a blanket.
But the intruder followed her into the bedroom, knocked her unconscious, sexually assaulted her, and left her for dead. Miraculously, Brooke regained consciousness several hours later, but found her grandmother dead. Brooke then ran to a neighbor's house for help. Incredibly, the neighbor made her wait outside.
Part of my left ear was missing and my whole left cheek was swollen, but she told me that her kids had to finish eating and she needed to get them dressed and everything, so she left me sitting out on her porch for like 45 minutes.
Eventually, the neighbor drove Brooke home. Later that day, at the hospital, Brooke gave police a description of her attacker.
He looked like my uncle. He had dark hair. He was about the same height. And that's the only person I could think that he looked like.
Her uncle, Clarence Elkins, was the victim's son-in-law. He lived about an hour's drive away and had no criminal record and no history of violence. His wife, Melinda, couldn't believe that Clarence would kill her mother.
I remember my reaction distinctly when he told me that my mom had been murdered. I mean, I actually doubled over in pain, you know, like in a fetal position almost.
Clarence denied any involvement, but was quickly taken into custody.
And I said to them, yes, I am his wife. And yes, I know that some women do stand up for their man and lie for them. But you're missing the biggest point here. That was my mother. And I want the person who did this to pay. And I'm telling you right now, it was not Clarence.
But police discovered that Clarence might have had a motive to hurt Judy Johnson.
But their theory is that Clarence has developed a hatred for his mother-in-law because the mother-in-law was allegedly interfering in his marriage with Melinda.
There was a woman who said she was Judy's best friend, saying she was present when Clarence Elkins called Judy about a week before the murder and threatened to kill her. That's pretty damning stuff.
Police found no physical evidence linking Clarence Elkins to the murder, but the eyewitness testimony placed him at the scene.
They asked me if I would point who hurt me and my grandma out. And I remember I had to spin around in this little spinny seat and I had to point out my uncle.
For her to point at Clarence and say, that's who did this to me, that was it. That's all I needed.
On June 4th, 1999, Clarence Elkins was convicted of first-degree murder and sexual assault. He was sentenced to 55 years in prison.
I broke down. I collapsed. I screamed. I turned around to my sister and I said, you know he didn't do this, and I collapsed, and it was just so chaotic.
They had a little 6-year-old girl who was saying it was her Uncle Clarence. Case closed.
But Brooke later said she wasn't sure what or who she saw. Based on the eyewitness testimony of a 6-year-old girl, Clarence Elkins was convicted of killing his mother-in-law and for the sexual assault and attempted murder of his niece.
The police that very morning searched Clarence's car for blood, for hair fibers, for different things. Not a trace. The car was fine. Searched his house, even to the point of searching the drains of his shower for blood and particles and things of that nature. Came up completely clean.
Clarence's wife, Melinda, was sure that her niece Brooke was mistaken when she identified Clarence as the man who attacked her. After all, she was only a child at the time, and the house was dark.
Shocked. I mean, to think that you can convict someone on ID testimony, let alone a 6-year-old child, with no physical evidence to back it up. How can this happen?
Sure enough, 4 years after the murder, Brooke Sutton, now 10 years old, recanted her testimony.
Do you think today that Uncle Clarence was the same man you saw in the kitchen that night with your grandma?
No.
I just had always had doubts. I knew I was wrong because I put him in there, and I wasn't positively sure.
Melinda petitioned the court for a new trial and was denied. So Melinda took matters into her own hands and decided to conduct her own investigation, creating a list of all known criminal offenders living near her mother's home.
I had started a suspect list shortly after my mom's murder. I mean, I was trying to comprehend who would do this to my mom. Who had access to her? Who did she know?
And she also sought help from an expert on wrongful convictions, Martin Yant. Together, they pored over the case file and discovered some important pieces of information. First, the witness who testified Clarence Elkins threatened Judy Johnson's life during a telephone call also claimed Judy called 911 to report the threat to police. But there was no evidence Judy Johnson ever called 911.
The 911 call should have been logged. It was obvious no such phone call had been made.
And they also discovered that the coroner took vaginal swabs from Judy Johnson during the autopsy. On those swabs, lab tests found a substance called acid phosphatase, an enzyme found in the male prostate gland. But those swabs were never tested for DNA.
To be fair, technology in forensic science is constantly improving.
6 years after the murder, Melinda Elkins received permission from the court to test the swab taken from her mother's autopsy. The forensic lab was able to identify a DNA profile from that swab. As Melinda always claimed, the DNA did not belong to Clarence Elkins.
We knew at that point that Clarence Elkins was innocent. We didn't know the name of the true perpetrator, but we knew his DNA profile.
So for the second time, Melinda Elkins petitioned the court for a new trial. Prosecutors argued that the DNA results were unreliable since the swab might have been contaminated. And the judge agreed, refusing to grant Clarence a new trial.
And I was livid. How dare they? And if do they want me to hand them the killer on a silver platter? Okay, that's what we'll do.
So now, Melinda decided to take the next step. She would conduct her own forensic investigation. To learn how to go about it, she discovered the world of forensic television.
I think initially what attracted me to Forensic Files was when I first turned it on, there was this big, loud voice of murder in blah, blah, blah town, and Forensic Files investigates. And I thought, wow, you know, I'm gonna watch this. I was learning how to gather DNA, how to preserve it. You know, there was a lot of different episodes that I watched that kind of put everything together.
Melinda decided to take her list of the convicted criminals living in her mother's neighborhood and surreptitiously collect their DNA samples for testing.
She begins teaching herself how to do investigations. She watches shows like Forensic Files, takes notes, and starts putting that into practice in terms of investigating suspects, collecting DNA, all the things that a private investigator would do.
Melinda followed these men to local bars and restaurants to collect their DNA from anything they might have left behind.
I would have to flirt with these people. I would get their either a cigarette butt, or I've gotten their beer bottle, I've gotten their drinking glass.
Using her own money and contributions solicited from her website, FreeClarence.com, Melinda hired a private lab to test these items for DNA. Unfortunately, none of the samples matched the DNA found on her mother. In the meantime, Clarence Elkins languished in jail.
She knew in her heart that her husband did not commit this crime, and she was absolutely committed to getting justice, not just for Clarence, but for her mother.
For years, Clarence Elkins sat in prison for a crime he claimed he didn't do, while his wife, Melinda, worked continuously to free him.
So she endured tremendous skepticism and insults along the way. People feel that Melinda somehow some big publicity haul.
The prosecutors wanted to portray me as just some dumb old hick from the country who was, you know, trying to get this publicity and have my name out there and my face shown on TV as being my 15 minutes of fame.
Then, one day, Melinda picked up the morning newspaper and read an article about Earl Mann, who had been convicted for sexually assaulting his three daughters.
I first wanted to look at Earl Mann's picture. I went online under the Ohio offender search, and I pulled up his picture, and it was uncanny how Clarence and him looked so similar.
But that wasn't all. Now, Melinda understood why her niece, Brooke Sutton, was forced to sit outside the neighbor's house for nearly an hour after the attack. Because the home belonged to Earl Mann and his common law wife.
It was like a light bulb that went off in my head, and I'm thinking, wow, is this too unreal or not? What would be a normal person's reaction to a child showing up at your door saying your grandmother's been killed and you're bloody and in a mess? What would your reaction be? It wasn't what her reaction was, definitely.
We ended up getting the rap sheet of Earl Mann. It was just pages and pages long. And most of the things started off with the word aggravated beforehand. You know, a lot of violent type offenses.
Melinda now had a pretty good idea who committed this crime. But she needed to find some way to prove it. Using tricks she learned from Forensic Files, Melinda first tried to get his saliva.
I started writing Earl Mann some letters. I gave him a brief description of what I look like, which is totally different than what I normally, what I really look like. And just that I was kind of a lonely person and I was searching the web for pen pals, which, you know, was kind of sickening to me.
And what her objective there was to see if she could get saliva on the envelope flap if he were to write back to her. What an amazing effort to try to get someone's DNA.
I wanted him to feel like, wow, I could really get some money off of this chick, you know? And I never received a letter.
Then Melinda discovered that Mann was not only in the same prison as her husband Clarence, but their cells were fairly close.
Come to find out that Earl Mann is actually in the same pod as Clarence, as the same housing pod, which probably consisted of 30 to 35 people.
So Melinda decided to involve Clarence in the investigation using another technique she learned from television: how to collect someone's DNA sample without them knowing.
They were getting discarded trash, discarded cigarette butts, paper cups out of the trash after they'd been thrown away. So I knew at that point that it no longer belongs to you if you discard it.
Melinda told Clarence to follow Earl Mann with a clean tissue and baggie on hand at all times.
I really didn't tell Clarence a lot about the DNA extractions that I was getting, but a cigarette butt would have been sufficient if he smoked, and he certainly did smoke.
Clarence did as instructed. And one day, he watched as Earl Mann left a cigarette butt in a clean ashtray.
He picked it up with the tissue, put it in the baggie, sealed it, and then put it in his Bible to flatten it and to conceal it until he could get it out of the prison, which I have never heard anybody ever getting DNA from inside the prison and sending it out to have it tested. Never heard of that.
Melinda sent Mann's cigarette butt for forensic testing at her own expense. And just as she expected, Earl Mann's DNA matched the bodily fluid on the swab from her mother's autopsy.
Oh my God, my hands went up in the air and I'm like, ah. And in the very next instant, it was, oh my God, that is the person who murdered my mom. I now know for sure. Which was difficult.
But amazingly, the court denied her motion for a new trial yet again. So, to free her husband, Melinda had to do one last thing. After 6 long years of trying to prove Clarence Elkins' innocence, his wife Melinda and her representatives decided to bypass the local judicial process and go to the top, the Attorney General for the state of Ohio.
A prosecutor has a first obligation to do justice. And the more I looked at this case, the more I felt that there had been an injustice.
Attorney General Petro knew that the state had ways to either prove or disprove this notion that Earl Mann's DNA was somehow falsified. And he didn't hesitate to use it.
We had Earl Mann's DNA in our database because we take DNA from every convicted felon, and so we had his DNA. We did confirm that it did match directly with the DNA taken from the crime scene.
In December of 2005, more than 6 years after he was wrongfully convicted, Clarence Elkins was a free man.
It's just a time of joy and happy tears.
Sadly, even though Melinda was responsible for Clarence's freedom, their marriage did not survive the ordeal. They divorced shortly after he was released.
I wish him the best, and I think this, with us not being together, is his chance for a new life. And it's just simply part of the devastated state that has been put on us. That was our marriage. It's gone. To no fault, but to the state, I blame.
He never blamed me. Clarence never blamed me. And I really would have blamed myself if I were him. Because I'd be angry if someone put me in prison for something that I didn't do.
Prosecutors believe Earl Mann's target, the night of the murder, was Brooke Sutton. But her grandmother woke up, fought to protect her, and paid with her life. Brooke saw Mann briefly before running away. He then assaulted her and left her for dead. The next morning, when Brooke regained consciousness, she ran to a neighbor's house for help. Ironically, she ended up on the doorstep of the man who tried to kill her just a few hours earlier.
The DNA evidence against Earl Mann is overwhelming. It's compelling. It's as absolute as you can possibly get in a criminal case, as far as I've ever seen.
In August of 2008, Earl Mann pled guilty to the rape and murder of Judy Johnson and will spend an additional 55 years in prison. Melinda now spends her time working for the Ohio Innocence Project, still fighting for people who have been wrongfully convicted.
We survived this, and now my sons are attending police academy because they want to make a difference in the world. They want this to never happen to someone again.
Had Melinda not had the faith and the drive to see this through, to create the stir, to create the momentum, Clarence Elkins would still be in prison.
And I think that with the show and Forensic Files and all the experts that you have that come on the show and give details of how this works is another phenomenal thing that people need to pay attention to, because this could happen to anybody.
Without Melinda's efforts, let's face it, Clarence Elkins would still be in prison.